Hi, friends. Let me tell you about this very cool special edition of one of our close reads books for this season. It's the Orbit Gold Edition of the Broken Earth Trilogy by N.K. Jemisin. This is so beautiful. The set includes, get this, an exclusive box illustrated by Justin Cherry Nephilomancer, a signed copy of the fifth season, fabric-bound hardcover editions of the trilogy, gilded silver edges, color endpaper art, oh my god, brand new foil-stamped covers, a ribbon bookmark, and an exclusive bonus scene from the fifth season. The bonus scene! I want it! Just pre-order before November 19th to get 20% off, and you can lock in your signed copy. Again, I say, your signed copy of the fifth season. Visit orbitgoldeditions.com to order. This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 19, Episode 41. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on structure, an overview, and why the fifth season.
15 minutes long, because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Lun.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Howard.
And we are going to be reading and talking about the fifth season. I need to let you know that we are going to be spoiling this up and down and sideways. You need to have read this book before you go into it, unless you're okay with spoilers, in which case, fair game. Have fun. But this is your warning, all of the spoilers, all of the time as we go through.
Yeah, because of structure, we really can't talk about this book without getting into a lot of the nitty-gritty of how things unfold.
Well, and to be quite honest, to be quite frank about this, if you haven't read this book, the discussions that we are having about structure are not going to be as meaningful for you, and you are not going to learn the things that we believe you as a writer really want to learn.
But having said that, we also know that sometimes you can want to listen to something without having read the book. Hopefully, you'll still be able to get stuff from the larger conversation. But if you have plans on reading the book, just do it before you continue listening.
I will also encourage you to look up content warnings for this book, because there is some pretty intense and dark stuff in there.
Yeah. So why did we pick this book? One of the reasons is that it is structurally audacious. Mm-hmm. When I finished reading this, I'm friends with the author, N.K. Jemisin, and the first time I saw Nora after seeing this, I walked up and I said, "Nora, just finished fifth season, so good. F you. You have some nerve, because now the rest of us have to live with this book being out in the world." So we wanted to talk about it because it is breaking so many of the conventions, mm-hmm. and it is structurally so solid, but it's not using an existing recipe.
Exactly. You know, and on top of that, it really is one of my favorite fantasies I've read in decades. I think as an epic fantasy novel, it does such a good job of fulfilling so many things that we look for when we go to epic fantasy in terms of big worlds, politics, you know, multi-perspectives, and exciting magic systems, right? It sort of really checks a lot of those boxes, but does something that feels very fresh and innovative with it to me.
It's just a great book.
Yeah.
We picked books we liked, y'all.
Yeah.
And we were like, let's figure it out. Because I think it's one of the things that I really love about having conversations on this podcast and teaching in general is that sometimes you do want to figure out why did something work.
Yeah.
And the best way to do that is to dig into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's easy to put it away and be like, oh, that was just so much fun. But like having a really good meal that you want to be able to replicate in some way, we want to figure out, you know, what's the salt, fat, acid, heat of mm-hmm. this book?
Yeah,
exactly.
So along those lines, that's a great segue. I was going to ask you, when you think about structure, what are the things that you think about? Like, what are some of the things that we are going to be thinking about as we're talking about this book?
I start with divisions, really. What are the three parts? Or what are the five parts? Are there going to be three parts? Are there going to be five parts? That is when I am creating a thing. That's where I begin. because that informs all of the decisions I make about the things that will be building those parts. This, for me, this book felt like it was built out of points of view. But structurally, you could argue it's built out of time, or it is built out of punctuated catastrophes, or if there's any number of ways to talk about carving it up.
Yeah. You know, I, as a reader and as an editor, I don't actively think about structure that often. It's a little bit of a thing that I just don't pay that much attention to it. It's not something I'm particularly interested in poking at. You know, obviously we do structural edits and move things around, but when I'm doing that, it's more about character arc. It's more about tension. It's more about all the other things we've talked about so far. And so I think Fifth Season really jumps out at me because it is one of the times where I'm actively thinking about structure, because it is not being applied in a passive way. It is being applied as an active engagement with the reader of how structure works in this book. The three different POVs, the reveal around what is going on with those POVs, the inversion from the beginning to the end, all the narrative rhyming and parallelism that happens throughout the book. And we're going to dig into all these topics in detail. But for me, it's hard for me not to think about Fifth Season and think about the structure of the book almost as its own character, almost as it is the device through which we are understanding this world in a way that feels so radical compared to, you know, what we see in most fiction of A to B to C to D.
You might think that you don't think about structure when you read or when you watch or whatever else, but I always come back to that moment when my 10-year-old and I were watching a movie. I think it was Paranorman, and I turned to him and said, "Do you think this plan's going to work?" And he looked at me, rolled his eyes and looked at me, "Dad, if it works, we don't have a whole movie." 10-year-old,
yeah,
already understood the meta, and I think we all have that happening subconsciously.
Yeah.
For me, and this is not something, this has nothing to do with this book, but to answer your question, I actually think that games and working on games has started to like really rewire the way that I think about story and structure as being sort of very divided from each other. Mm-hmm. Because the way that a lot of games work, you don't have as much control as you do in a book about the way that people take in story information. So you always have to be thinking like, how do all these different pieces of information, how do the all these different pieces of narrative actually create forward motion, even if people pick them up at different times and in different ways? And it started to affect the way that I write stories, where I'm like, I want to write a story where you can read things out of order. And that is where it does come back to this book, which is, I think, a really great way of saying you can play around with structure, you can play around with order, and you can be really out front with it. I think you said audacious, someone said audacious earlier. And I think there's something really great about that, because it gets you to challenge the way that we have been told that stories have to exist. Mm-hmm. And in a world where, you know, it's not just me, gaming and movies and television impact a lot of the ways that we take in narrative, it's nice to see books playing with that as well. You know, and just because it's in print doesn't mean that we can't have fun with the form.
Yeah, I think one of the things you said about the being able to, you know, writing in things that you were reading out of sequence, that's one of the things that's interesting about Fifth Season, is that the timeline is not sequential. And structurally, the things that she's using that for, that controlling that order of information, that control of time to play with things that we'll be talking about later with parallelism and inversion. But even on a very, I'm a early career writer, thinking about the order of information that you portray to the reader, that is one of the basic elements of story structure that she plays with all the way through this.
And it's interesting because time is one of the first clues of what's happening in the meta narrative.
Yes.
The timeline is one of the first, you know, Howard, you and I were talking about this off mic, but, you know, realizing that the world is not ending in these other storylines, that humanness still exists in these other storylines, is the thing that starts to clue us into, wait, something else exciting is happening.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. Speaking of timelines, I believe that it is time for us to take a small break.
This episode of Writing Excuses is sponsored in part by Acorns.
Money can be a difficult topic for writers and creative professionals. It's not like earning a regular paycheck that comes in at reliable intervals. It requires more careful planning to make sure that that advance covers you not just this year, but sets you up for the future as well. Learning to invest and be smart with your money takes time and research, and it's easy to put that off in favor of short-term goals. I encourage all the writers I work with to read up on the options out there and do their homework to figure out what makes sense for them. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing in your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. Head to acorns.com/WX or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing your future today. Client testimonial, compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/WX.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This week, our thing of the week is a role-playing game called Rest in Pieces, which is a short game about being roommates with the Grim Reaper. It uses, instead of dice, a Jenga tower, which you'll see in other games like Dread. But in this case, half of the blocks are painted black and half of them are painted white. So as you go through the game, you have to do something, you will pull a block, and if the tower falls, something terrible happens. But in this case, whether you are going to act in a selfless way or a selfish way determines what color block you have to pull. And that is a very compelling dynamic that changes the way that you play the game, the decisions that you make. It's a really wonderful idea, and the game is a lot of fun and has a lot of cute art in it as well. Once again, that game is called Rest in Pieces.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
So as we come back into this, one of the other things that I am interested in hearing you all talk about is to foreshadow some of the things that we'll be talking about later. We're going to be touching on things like topics that we'll be hitting, or whose perspective is it anyway, parallelism and inversion, and then tradition and innovation. And so I just want to give our readers a prologue of why we think it's important to talk about those things, because those are not structural elements that most people talk about.
Yeah.
Most of the time when people talk about structure, they're talking about pacing. They're talking about the order of information that I brought up before. They're talking about scene and sequel. And we're not going to be talking about any of that. So why is it important to be thinking about the things that we're going to be talking about with structure? And what can, like, give us a little a bit of
taste. You want teasers?
I want teasers.
I think for me, I mean, this connects to what Aaron was saying earlier, and the idea that the structure of this book is audacious is, you know, and this might just come from my perspective of reading so many books and seeing so many things at various stages of their drafting, but anytime, I want people to be more playful with structure.
Mm-hmm.
What I would love is people to understand that you can play with time, you can play with perspective, you can play with the sequencing of things to get across your core thematic elements more than you are getting across your plot beats, right?
Right.
So much of structure as is currently taught, whether that's like Save the Cat or something like that, is, or Hero's Journey, is so much about how do you get across clearly the A to B to C to D. And to me, that can sometimes feel very flat or not in service of the actual goal of your story, right? And so if you step back a moment and think about what story am I trying to tell here and what the best way is to tell that, because this is what I'm writing about. This is why this story is important to me. You know, we're going to be talking to N.K. Jemisin at the end of this cycle. And one of the things I'm so excited to hear from her is, did she write this out of order, or did she write this in order and reassemble it into the form that we see now? I suspect she wrote it out of order, but I'm kind of curious at what point in the process it occurred to her to use this structure.
I'll say for perspective, I think it's a little bit about challenging some of the assumptions of structure. So I think a lot of times we think of perspective, POV, as like a decision that you make at the beginning and you go, okay, I'm going to do this POV and I'm going to write this story. And like, it's a thing that like, it cannot change, but like you made the decision. It's like, you know, I'm like, I must stay in this perspective because I told myself I have to, or because that's the way I think books are written, or it's the way that the books that I've read have been. And what I like about this is it shows that even the things that we think of as assumptions or as early decisions can be tools that we decide to wield intentionally in the story in ways that are not the ways that necessarily the books we're used to have wielded them. Plus, I feel like this is, to be honest, a story where if you don't speak about perspective on some level, you're doing a disservice to like one of the major tools that is used within the book.
Way back in Writing Excuses Season 1, I figured out, and just so we're clear, Writing Excuses Season 1 is the story of Howard figuring out what it is he's actually doing. Up until that time, I did not know what POV meant. Mm. I did not know that I was writing social set. I did not know anything. I was so much more not that smart than I am now. The point, though, is that I did know that the story was being told based on a principle that is sometimes articulated as your POV character should be the one who is in the most pain. And mine was the POV character or the camera angle should be who is in the best position to tell a joke about what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Okay. That principle right there, that POV principle right there for me dictated mountains of structure because I had to move things around in order for it to make sense for the camera to be pointed at this person so I can deliver this joke. So when we talk about perspective as a structural tool, it's absolutely a structural tool because if the perspective is important, it is going to be dictating all of the structural elements that go into justifying it.
One of the things that, beginning our spoilers now, one of the things that happens in this is that Nora breaks one of the rules, which is that second person is not the done thing. And as you get through the story, you realize that it's not actually second person that we're getting. And that's a very structural decision about why to use that and when to use it. And for me, one of the things that is interesting about it and why I like using this book to talk about structure is that the reason to not use second person is that it can be distancing. And that is exactly what that character is going through, is that distancing. And there's also a transformation that happens through the book. So there are all of these different small structural tools that she's kind of taking and blowing up.
Yeah. Well, and we could have used this book to teach any of the segments that we've done this year, right? Yeah. what I find fascinating is that she somehow turns each of those elements into structure. The structure of this book is where the tension lies. The voice is tied to structure in the way that you're talking about the switches to second person. Who's narrating it? Character structure, because the parallels of the three versions of the same character mm-hmm. across this book. And it's just endlessly fascinating to me to see the ways in which structure is such the centerpiece that holds up all the other parts of the book in a way that is more visible and more active than we see in other fiction.
And I think that's one of the things that you know, you as a listener can think about with your own book. Mm-hmm. If you've been thinking about, oh, I have to use the Save the Cat structure, why that particular one? Mm-hmm. I often think about story structure as a recipe, that you can have a recipe and you can make a really good recipe. But if you say, okay, according to this, every recipe needs to have leavening, which is great if you're doing a cake, but not so good for soup. And it's irrelevant for soup. Leavening is completely irrelevant. So what's fun for me with this one is that I feel like I'm watching an improvisational cook go into the kitchen, mm-hmm. or I feel like I'm watching someone doing molecular gastronomy, where they're like, okay, this looks like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but actually,
it's ham and cheese. Or, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah. There's a line in, I think it's the prologue. I'm going to go ahead and read this real quick. The woman I mentioned, the one whose son is dead, she was not in Eumenes, thankfully, or this would be a very short tale, and you would not exist. That last bit, and you would not exist. Wait, me, the reader? Am I tied into this? And then we get to those chapters where the point of view is second person, and you, oh, that means, and then the you point of view would not exist because I still haven't decoded at this point in my reading. Mm-hmm. I still have not decoded what this means, but that is not a throwaway line. That is a hook upon which a whole bunch of structure is going to hang, and I love it.
I'm glad you brought that one up, because I in the reread of this, I hit that line. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
I need to call Nora and yell at her again. Because she tells you up front what she's doing. And yep. I'm like,
and you would not exist? Really?
Yeah.
That was my reaction. I was, in my head, so many of the reveals come so late, or like in my head, like the second person was used so sparingly. And it's right there in the prologue. It's yeah. there from the jump. It is all throughout. And it's almost, the reveal is that she wasn't hiding anything from yeah. us. It just took us a long time to understand. You know?
It's the surprising yet inevitable, where you look at it and say, well, obviously it was inevitable, but now I'm angry that you surprised me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the other things that, just when we're talking about it, one of the other tools that she uses is actually the titles of the chapters. When you look at the table of contents, the prologue, you are here. Chapter one, you at the end. Chapter two, Demaya and Winter's Past. And it's like, oh, telling me straight up front what's happening.
Yeah.
Three, you're on your way. And it is fascinating to me that this is also, because of the two interludes, arguably a classic three-act structure, but it is profoundly not a three-act structure, because yeah. there are so many moving pieces that are happening simultaneously.
And again, she's using so many classic things, like the chapter titles thing we don't see anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's a callback. It's a throwback yeah. to an older mode of storytelling. And yet, the end result feels so contemporary and fresh.
Yeah. So with that, let's go ahead and give you some homework. I actually want you to look at the table of contents. And for those of you who have read the book, this is specifically for you. Look at the table of contents, and without opening the book again, write down the one important thing you remember from that chapter. And then through the course of the next several episodes, as we talk through things, refer back to that list and see what you need to add to it that is also important that you missed on the first reading. This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Have you ever wanted to ask one of the Writing Excuses hosts for very specific, very you-focused help? There's an offering on the Writing Excuses Patreon that will let you do exactly that. The private instruction tier includes everything from the lower tiers, plus a quarterly one-on-one Zoom meeting with a host of your choice. You might choose, for example, to work with me on your humorous prose, engage Dong Wan's expertise on your world building, or study with Aaron to level up your game writing. Visit patreon.com/writingexcuses for more details.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dong Wan Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.